Hello, my name is Stephen Schaub. I'm the leader of the Fidget Revolution, as well as a master printer and hybrid artist at Indian Hill Imageworks in Powlett, Vermont, and a co-leader and instructor at filmisfun.com. Today, I'm joined by Eve Schaub, my wife, who was a co-owner of Indian Hill Gallery and who is a professional writer. And today, we say hi.
Hi there.
And also the co-author of the Fidget Revolution Manifesto. And today, we are going to talk about something that I feel Eve and I have a lot of personal experience with. And this is the value of doing small editions or one of one when it comes to your artwork, as opposed to doing open-ended or very large limited editions. Additionally, we're going to talk about the value of an artist statement. And I think we're also going to talk about sort of the value of marketing yourself in a limited way and in a more focused way than we see a lot of people going. Some of this conversation that we're going to talk about is based upon articles and blogs that I've been reading online on lots of different websites where I hear people pontificating on their particular beliefs regarding editions and artist statements and all that. But I sit back and I ask myself, well, who the hell are these people? I mean, you know, anybody can just get up and scream and yell, but, you know, what is their information based upon? So, Eve, why don't we kick it out the door here?
Well, would you like to start with?
Why don't we start with the limited editions? Because I've talked about this before on Fidgetal, and why don't we recap?
When we had... Well, I think what this is the kind of thing that we have learned simply through trial and error and personal experience. I think way back when... years and years ago, I remember the largest edition that you started with was somewhere in the neighborhood of 30, right?
Yeah, 25 or 30, yeah.
And at that, and ever since then, you've come progressively downward in the size of editions to the point where now you produce one of one. Artwork is unique, and the person who decides to purchase it, they own the only one that exists.
One negative, one print.
Right, exactly. Now, that might seem counterintuitive to people who, because of the nature of the medium of photography, which, unlike a lot of other art media, lends itself very easily to infinite reproducibility. However, when you're talking about collectability, you have to go in the opposite direction of that. And that's what we have found out through our personal experience. If there's more than one, people tend to feel, and this is more a strategy than anything in terms of selling it, people tend to say, oh, well, if there's more than one, I can always come back.
Right, and I can get it later. There's no incentive to buy an artwork today. But additionally, I think that there's also, in this age of such fast-changing technology, to say that you're going to do an edition of, say, 30 prints, which would take an insanely long time to sell, unless you were just selling the work for nothing or you're the most famous artist ever to grace this planet.
And you're also going to have a consequent lowering of the price, because of
you there are
know,
so many exactly
it's supply and demand,
but I think that the technology puts a burden on people nowadays that, you know, if you're making your work on, say, you know, an Epson printer using a particular paper, and let's say this is going to take 10 or 15 years to make this entire edition, you know, unless you're going to print it all at once, it might not be possible in 10 or 12 years.
It's not practical
to use the same materials that you use when
and
you
and if you
the
do it
prints.
Up all at once, then you've got serious inventory.
And which, serious investment
which
of
from
money.
From a practical standpoint, is not going to make a lot of sense.
Right.
So you've got to have good storage. There's all kinds of problems there.
When we ran Indian Hill Gallery, we had a policy that you had to do limited editions or we wouldn't carry you.
Right.
And I think that most artists that we worked with were doing editions fewer than 10.
I think that's... True.
Yeah. And, you know, I think when the gallery started, I think I was doing editions of like 7, and then that went to 3, and then it went to 1 of 1. And I have to say, just right now, doing the 1 of 1 for me as a working artist...
I think it's also very sort of satisfying. You have
very,
immediate
very.
Closure. You've
yes.
made the work, it's done, and you can move on and not have to constantly be looking backward, revisiting, redoing... You know, I think there's something very nice and clean about that.
And it's clean, it's nice, it keeps me fresh, it keeps me always having to make new work and focus on expanding myself as a visual artist. But I also think that the last couple of situations where I recently just got a dealer in Manhattan who's carrying my work, and it was a very big sort of deal for me, and one of the big things that was highly liked about my work beyond the work.
It was a strong selling point.
Was that they were one of ones. Unique one of ones. And that is a selling point in the art market. You know, I think photographers want to have that ability or like that ability that they can reproduce their stuff endlessly. But I think that people who want that are people who aren't really in the art market. And the reason I say that is that if you're in the art market and if you're actively selling your work, you know how long it takes to sell 10, 15, or 20 artworks of a particular image at a fair market value price. I mean, the example is Michael Kenna, who, you know, we've gone to see a couple of shows of, or Andy Leibowitz's work. I mean, look at Michael Kenna's work. I think he does editions of 35, the last that I remember. And I remember the show that we went to in Detroit, there were works that had been out there for an incredibly long period of time that really had only sold half an edition.
Right.
You know, it takes a long time to sell that many works. And you have to ask yourself, if you're an active working photographer who's making, you know, a dozen, two dozen, three dozen good images a year, I mean really high quality images, and you're going to make 10, 15, 20, 30 copies of each of those images, within a couple of years what you realize is that you've got such a backlog of images that you're going to have to always go back and print that in my mind it becomes counter to the artistic process.
It almost feels like a weight, you know, like you can't ever be like, okay, now I'm done with this, you know, now I'm moving on and I'm going to concentrate my brain power on the next work, the next project. You know, it seems to me to be just very efficient in that way. I'm also reminded of the, who's the photographer, his name is escaping me. He does large color works, and for each one he sells, the price goes up.
Right.
Until the point, you know, whatever the market will bear.
Right.
And so at some point it just becomes so expensive that nobody can buy it anymore.
Right.
I always thought that was a very clever way to deal with it. It's another way of looking at it.
Yep.
And, you know, it's his way of sort of figuring out what the market will bear.
Well, I know Clyde Butcher, he makes all the prints he can basically make of an image in 1 year. And then he doesn't
That's
print that image
way
anymore.
Of handling.
Right. But I really think, though, from just a healthy, I mean, this is for me speaking.
And also, you, I think, are on the high end of high generating images. I mean, you're very prolific.
Yes.
You make works all the time, constantly, you know, and you're constantly moving forward. And I think in particular for that kind of personality, that kind of artistic person, it's very difficult to carry with you everything before you that you've ever done.
I agree.
You know, there's not this sense with you that, oh my goodness, this is it. This is the one image that I'm going to hang my hat on for the next 10 years.
Right, because I couldn't imagine that. To me, in my mind, that's so foreign.
Well, for some folks, I think that is what happens, and I think it's unfortunate because, you know, if that's what you're going to do, that's not focusing on the future. That's not focusing on the new
things. Well, it's not focusing on your growth as a creative artist, you know. And it's one thing to say, you know, you're going to go back and reprint and revisit and, you know, change an image as you change. But I'm kind of like, no, you made the image, make the work and be done with it and move on. There's something I think healthy about that. And especially
pretty much the argument.
Well, let me just say one last thing though, but especially in this day and age where there are so many people making visual works nowadays that everything is bombarded with the amount of work that's out there. And I do think that it's healthy from a business standpoint, but also just from an artistic standpoint to really say, you know, how many images do I really want to make of this and have that.
And the thing is, there's this big divide.
Yeah.
If you're doing one, you're doing one.
That's
right. That's, you know, but once you say you're doing more than one,
yeah,
you could be doing two, you could be doing 50, you're gone down a different path.
Absolutely.
That leads to a different perception of that piece.
I also think a different audience.
Because there is always going to be more than one.
I also think it's a different audience because I find that people who come into the gallery and who they find out that it's a one of one. People who are used to collecting art, and I'm using art in a bigger term now, you know, they collect paintings and sculptures and stuff as well. They told me straight out, well, I would have never bought it if it had been an edition piece.
Right.
But because it's a one of one, I want it.
I want it because this is the one. This is the only one.
They think about it like a painting or like a sculpture, you know, because it's art. And it's a one of one, and that's the creation. And I just think that this is a healthy thing for people listening to this audio to seriously consider. Yeah. The next thing, let's talk about artist statements. I've seen different posts on the internet where, you know, people talk about the value of an artist statement and also how they absolutely loathe and hate and despise artist statements. And I think that you and I can make a fair statement right now that when we ran the gallery, that most of the artist statements that we read that were written by the actual artists weren't very good.
Well, and this is, you know, this is speaking about, you know, we would get many, many, many submissions of people sending in their works for us to look at, and not always, but regularly they would send some sort of a statement. And unfortunately, the quality of these was usually not doing justice to the work.
Exactly. And or in some cases, you would read the artist statement and you'd be all excited to see the work. And then you go, whoa, wait a minute. This has nothing to do with what the work is about.
Actually, you know? Well, yeah, that can happen too.
Right.
Sure.
And I think that the policy that we had at Indian Hill was that you wrote, as a professional writer,
that I did
all of the artist statements. And I have to say that, you know, I am an incredibly fortunate photographer because Eve has written all of my artist statements and prefaces for different books. And as a result, I find, let me just be selfish here for a minute, I have found that having the ability of somebody who is art educated and who can write extremely well, look at my work, talk to me about my work, engage in a helpful conversation, and then write something about it is wonderful because I get to see my work through somebody's eyes who I respect, not only in terms of, you know, as a working artist and a writer, but it allows me to see my work in a different package than just the work on the wall. It allows it to encompass something that I can read and go, yes, that is what it's about. And then I can use those words and that type of communication when a client comes to me and wants to know more about the work.
You can speak to them in that language.
That's right. And it allows me...
That reinforces that same message.
Right. Well, 'cause you hear all the time. People say, it's just about the photographs. Isn't it good enough just to hang the photographs on the wall? Shouldn't that be all you need? Why do you need writing to go with it? And my answer back is, you know what? If you want to be in the art world, if you want to be in the real art world, not the pretend art world, but the real art world.
You got to do it.
You got to do it. Anybody who tells you you don't isn't in the real art world. They're make-believe.
Well, and you can understand why people want to have that opinion.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, they're not writers. They're visual artists. And so
right.
That is their primary language that they want to speak in and that they feel comfortable in. And so that makes total sense.
Well, I mean, anybody who goes to a serious interview showing their work to a gallery, obviously, the person running the gallery has lots of experience, you know, in good cases, and in really high-end galleries. They're going to look at your work, they're going to formulate an opinion, and I guarantee you they're going to ask you this question. So tell me about your work. And if your answer is...
Well, I use this camera and this lens.
and it's about the work. Why does there have to be any more? Here's the photography. This is what
it's
about.
Well, and it also, then that would also indicate to me, if I were the person who was being shown that work, that the person wasn't very reflective about their own work.
That's
they
right.
hadn't given it a lot of thought. Now, that may not be true.
Right.
But that's what it's going to show me, because they don't have anything to say.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's an interesting point that you make, that I've regularly, always done your statements, and
yes.
It makes me think, in particular, that might be a great thing to recommend, that people seek someone out who they respect, who they feel can look at their work
objectively,
and give them, you know, because I'm so objective.
Okay. Yes, very objective. Yes,
and they can write something up for you, and I bet most people know somebody like that. Who would be, you know, happy to sit down and talk with you about your work, look at it, and maybe write you up a paragraph.
Well, there've been articles on the internet posted recently that I've noticed on different Facebook groups and stuff where people have said comments like, no one really cares what camera you used. No one really cares what lens or stuff like that you used to make an artwork. And my comment back is, no, that's not absolutely true. People do care about the camera, the process, as long as it's about the artwork, like somehow what you're telling them, like it's printed on this handmade paper for a specific reason for the visual quality.
Right.
Or I chose...
Or did you use any special technique?
Was I using film or digital? All those kind of things help provide
information. Those are important, but that's not all.
That's right.
Obviously.
Absolutely.
You have to then go on from there and say, and then here's what else.
Right. And I think that this is the thing that I think, you know, we've known people in our life that have basically said, artist statements are worthless, you don't need them. And as I said, I can't say it enough.
You may not like them.
You may not like them, but if you don't have one, if you don't have a serious artist statement about your work.
It's a huge handicap.
It is.
You know what? As an artist, think of it this way. As an artist, you want to use every tool at your disposal to let the viewer into your work.
That's right.
So you're going to use everything you have. You're going to use your technology. You're going to use your visual, the concept that you have in your head, and you're going to communicate that in a visual way. You're going to use it in the finishing. And the presentation. You also need to use words.
But I also think it's important that if you're going to have somebody else write an artist statement for you, that they write a really good artist statement. And the reality is, if you look at statements that are like in books, when people are talking about a particular body of work, you know, a curator at some museum or something, if you look at the tone that they use, it's always positive, but it's not like ridiculous, over-the-top, creative writing 101 cushy. And I think it's important that you find people that write that way. Because I think that one of the big concerns is that, you know, somebody writes a statement and it's just too far over the top. I think you want something that creatively draws upon the strengths of your artwork, fills in some gaps, and allows it. Because reality is, you might not be able to be, chances are you won't be, in that gallery when somebody's looking at your work. You might not be able to talk to somebody when they come to your website.
So that statement is standing in for having a conversation with you.
That's right.
So tell me about your work.
If you go to stephenschaub.com, which is my website, and we'll talk about websites in a minute and online content. If you go to stephenschaub.com, you'll notice that my artworks that are live right now are my surroundings project. And there's only one image visible on the internet. And underneath there is a statement that Eve wrote about this particular body of work. I think it's fantastic. I think it hits it right on the head. And it gives the information that I feel is important. And it also gives it to somebody in a way that they can look at it, understand it, and also understand what they're looking at in a fuller, more educated way. The same way as they could if they were at our gallery talking to me directly while looking at the work. This has to fill in for me. It has to provide that information. It can't be some 30-page document. It needs to be something that somebody can sit down,
no,
read,
concise.
And go.
It's concise. It should never be more than a page.
That's right.
And
it's
in
there.
Fact, at best, you know, it should be only
half
a page.
Three-quarters. Exactly.
Yeah, a couple hundred words. And you can talk a tiny bit about your process. You can talk a little bit about the theme of the work, your interest in the work, what it conjures up for you,
reflections on the history of the process or the art in general.
You can talk, and it might be relevant to mention a little bit about your background, perhaps. But again, don't go on and on.
Yeah, and it has to relate to what you're trying to discuss.
And if you can get someone else to do it for you, that would be great.
Yeah.
Somebody who you know who's writing you respect.
Because,
you know, if you're worried, I know sometimes the concern is, well, I can't write this about myself.
Then don't.
I'm gonna sound like I'm talking about how great I am,
exactly.
And I'm not comfortable with that. Well, let somebody else talk about how great you are.
Right.
And they're gonna do it in a very, you know, hopefully, and likely more moderate way that sounds believable.
Well, I think
and convincing,
I think the sum of this gets into everybody feels they're a writer. The reality is they're not.
Well, that's just like how everyone feels they're a photographer.
Exactly.
Everybody owns a pencil, so everybody's a writer.
Right.
Everybody nowadays owns a camera, so everyone's a photographer.
And I think it's important to have that distinction, that break, and to have that reflective quality. Another thing you could do is invite over 10 or 15 of your friends who you trust and who you value their content, throw out a portfolio, have your writer friends sitting in the room, and have everybody talk about your work. That's right. And have everybody talk about their work and what they like, and then sit down and make that into a statement.
Someone could very well bring in something that you hadn't thought of.
That's right.
And that might be very important that you hadn't maybe consciously incorporated. Yeah,
unconsciously maybe you were, but not consciously.
But once you recognize it, that might be a very valuable tool for you.
What? It's happened to me in my work, you know, and it's been very beneficial for me as a working artist, and it's something that I think that, you know, seriously consider. The next thing let's talk about is promoting yourself. And I think that this is something that I've been very much thinking about recently. I've had many, many, many different incarnations of my personal art website. And it's gone anywhere from a handful of images to hundreds of images on the website. And it's interesting. After meeting with my art dealer in New York, one of the very first comments he made to me was, "Don't ever send your stuff on the internet ever again." And I looked at him like, "What?" And the reason for that was because the energy of the actual artwork really isn't conveyed on the internet. And this is true, and everybody knows this. Everybody knows that what you're seeing
is... Well, it's a very difficult problem.
It is.
Because everybody needs to have a presence on the internet.
That's right. But how much of a presence?
How do you do that without lessening the portrayal of your artwork over the miles?
Exactly.
And there really isn't a solution.
There isn't.
There's not a good solution.
The one that was suggested to me, and that I've now implemented in my own work, which was, okay, post one image. Do the best you can to try to convey what it feels like. And I do mean feels like, because it's not just what it looks like. It's what it feels like when you're actually in front of an artwork. And then have the artist statement and have the ability for somebody to contact you. And that's it. And then I rotate that artwork every week or every 10 days. So the website's always staying fresh. People that are subscribed to my website are always seeing new work. But there isn't what I used to have, which was basically an online catalog showing dozens and dozens of different...
it's almost like a gallery.
Yeah, and it really doesn't work. I mean...
And it didn't do... Well,
for you and I, have we ever sold any artwork when we had the gallery? Did we ever sell a single artwork off the internet?
Exclusively off the internet? No.
No.
There. I can think of cases where people would see a work in person, go away, and then they wanted to see it again.
Or they would see it on the internet and say, "I want to see it in person." But I can't think of anybody that we ever sold anything to
without them seeing it in person.
That's right. Because art is a very personal thing. People want to see what they're really buying.
And also, it's true that you're not getting the full picture with anything. I'm sure everybody's had the experience where they buy something that they've only seen in a picture, whether it's in a catalog or on a website. And then when it shows up, there's a discrepancy. When you see something in person, there's, you know, a whole bunch of information that you can't get any other way.
Yep. So in this case, what I'm saying, much like the idea that even I discussed first about with regards to limited editions or doing one of ones, when it comes to the internet and your online presence, as a fine artist... Less is more. Less is a lot more. You know, don't feel you have to post every single thing you ever make. Post the best of the best.
Well, and there's also just the you know, don't dilute yourself.
Yeah. If people want to see it,
Seek you out and find you.
That's
and
right.
Less is more. And you want to leave people wanting more. You want people to want to come in and meet you and see your work.
But for me, it was such...
Ideally, that would always happen.
It was such a shock when, you know, I'm meeting with the dealer and he's like, "Wow, this is really different than what I thought."
It's so different that you should never show
that was his words.
He goes,
"You should never show it again."
Course,
and I went, "Wow."
At the same time, we all know that you can't really do that.
That's right.
You do have to be on the internet, you know, because there's always going to be that next person who you're going to be talking to who's halfway around the world, who for some reason you want them to see your work.
That's
and this
right.
is how they do it.
And so striking a balance of a handful of images, good text, clean, easy for somebody to see, I think is really the right balance as a working artist. And keep it fresh. You know, what a lot of artists do is they'll post...
Leave out the flash.
People will post 50 images and then go, "There it is," and they'll walk away and they won't touch their website for 6 months. You know, I'd rather say, you know what, change that image or those handful of images every 2 to 3 weeks and keep the website fresh so it's encouraging people to come back and to visit you as a working artist.
Well, and I know I can hear people right now saying, "Oh, that's too much of a pain. Yeah. I don't have time to do that."
Well, tough.
I think that if you want to have a relevant presence on the web that does justice to what you are doing, you have to think of it as part of your process. This is just one more part of the process. I go out, I make my works, I bring them in, I finish them, and I post a new work periodically. It's well, part of the whole deal.
Our friend Rick had said to me a couple of times and to other friends that I knew that, you know, basically as a working artist, 50% of your time should be making artwork. And the other 50% of your time
should be promoting
your artwork. Yeah. And promoting
and
your artwork.
That's hard for people to wrap their mind
going
around.
To art openings and just being there. And seriously looking at other people's work. This is the one thing that I find so interesting, is that so many artists, when they go to look at somebody else's work or they go to galleries and stuff, they're always running it through the prism of their own work. And they're not really looking at the work and growing from the work.
I agree with that. I think, you know, running the gallery,
yes.
We would frequently have artists come in, and you could almost feel
yes.
that they were photographers coming in to sort of screen us through their own, here's what I'm looking to see.
Right.
You know, instead of coming in a very open way
yep.
and really seeing what, you know, and I can understand that because there's that defensiveness. There's
sure.
that I want to see this the way I want to see it because I want to view myself in a certain way. And it's hard.
I agree. And I think that is something, though, that I can't encourage people enough to seriously try to do.
Try to be open.
Yeah.
To seeing what's in front of
you. And honestly look at what's in front of you and don't sort of have the rose-colored glasses when it comes to your own work, you know, and look at it honestly, be able to enjoy other people's work and learn and steal.
It's hard.
Steal from other people's work is very important.
How about
know?
Be inspired?
No, well, use inspired. That's the more politically correct way. But do whatever you can and allow all of these things to influence you. Seriously
it's
consider.
Hard.
It is hard.
But try.
Consider the idea of doing one-of-ones or really, really, really tiny, tiny, tiny additions. I mean,
because you will benefit from
it. You will benefit from it tremendously. Seek out, everybody, go buy yourself a cheesecake and get yourself a pot of coffee and invite 10 of your friends over and have an art review
and
party.
And take a lot of notes.
And take a lot of notes.
Maybe record it.
Record it, it's right.
On your phone.
And then
whatever.
Give it to a friend of yours who's a writer and say, look at my work with me, talk to me, now can you make all this make sense? And you know what? If it costs you $500 to have somebody do that, how much did it cost to have your website made? You know, this is valuable promotional material that you're going to use again and again.
By the way, I don't think it's going to cost $500.
No, but I'm just, if it costs $100, you know, $100 and a Cheesecake Factory cheesecake. I mean, you're out cheap, to be really honest.
But remember that this is part of what you have to do.
That's right.
This is valuable and it's part of what the process.
And when it comes,
it's part of your work.
And when it comes to your online content, just remember, you know, when you post something on the internet, it's always there. You know, it doesn't really go away. Once Google and all the search people start, you know, recording all the stuff you post, it's really there.
So you put your best foot forward.
Exactly.
And less is more.
That's right. Less is more. Anyways, Eve, thank you very much for sharing this conversation here. And
my pleasure.
Thank you very much for listening. And I can't wait to hear your thoughts. Have a great day.